Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, the clown show continues. Schiff and Nadler are trying to do their smoke and mirrors for the Senate. It's not working out that well. They don't understand why. They've admitted they haven't proven the commission of a crime, but because they say so, there's a clear high crime and misdemeanor which is required for impeachment. And so many House folks are still carrying on about Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. The fact that it all turned out to be a hoax, well, we shouldn't look at that. We should trust them. I think Schiff and Nadler are the two poster children for term limits. They need to be selling shoes. Well, yesterday we were talking about Nibiru, Planet X. And, you know, there's every possibility it's going to come back through the solar system sometime in the near future. The gravitational pull of a planet entering the inner solar system would have profound effects on the other orbiting bodies, including Earth. In fact, according to the Anunnaki, a previous appearance in Nibiru was responsible for the great flood recorded in Genesis. If you recall, that wiped out nearly all life on our planet. But thanks to Noah, the human race continued. And going even further back, some researchers on this topic suspect Nibiru once even collided with Earth millions of years ago. That created the asteroid belt and resulted in the enormous gouges in our planet that the oceans now fill. Of course, that brings up the discussion about Tiamat, which was supposedly a massive planet, half of which was destroyed by Nibiru, and the other half became Earth. Now, there's a number of ancient manuscripts that support the Planet X theory. It shows that Earth, during an ancient past, went through some catastrophic events to include a pole reversal and several tilt adjustments, along with meteor showers, tidal waves, land tides. Research named Mark Hazelwood says that Earth is in for some massive and catastrophic changes as Nibiru approaches. Floods, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, possibly even a pole shift and other natural disasters. Only a few hundred million people out of the billions on Earth would survive, he says. And another source says the gravitational pull of Nibiru might even stop the Earth's rotation for 3 days. If you recall in the Bible, it talked about 3 days of darkness. And on the other side, it'd be 3 days of sun. Now, some Nibiru researchers also cite the prophecies of Edgar Cayce, who predicted we'd soon suffer monumental Earth changes, the pole shift. Of course, he didn't attribute it to anything as specific as a visiting planet. And with Nibiru en route, if it's causing a lot of the climate issues, we need Greta Thunberg to get up there and tell Nibiru not to come, to go away. Astronomers, other scientists who would seem to be in a position to know such things and made no announcements about the approach of any planet-sized body. Apparently, they've not detected anything similar. And others who believe that Nibiru is approaching say the scientists know and they're covering it up because they've been told to. Now, understanding the makeup of Planet X and the essential pole shift conditions, you can readily envision raining rocks, extreme high winds with sheets of drenching rain, and extremely loud stratospheric lightning. And there'd be a need to be out of that wind, below ground, covered, and in a drainable location. Now, I will point out, archaeologists have discovered in Turkey, of all places, an underground city large enough to hold 200,000 people. With rocks of many sizes, potentially flying with the wind, above ground dwellings are going to sustain hits. But if the buildings are within the lee of a berm or a steep hill or a heavy forested slope of a mountain, then the force of that wind will be reduced. Of course, you have to understand that any existing structure, no matter how well placed, could potentially be destroyed once the pole shift is finished. Now, riding out the pole shift would also require personal protection, such as a helmet, knee and elbow pads, ear protection against shock waves. Maybe even a full body suit for support that'll provide protection against physical traumas, such as a speed skating suit. Another important item is a light and easy to store face mask that'll filter out the odors and airborne chemicals. So what's it going to be like? What's after time, assuming Nibiru comes back, going to be like? Well, looking at it in a positive light is said to be important, being proactive now about your aftertime concepts and picking through them to see what you can find hiding there that you don't like will help prevent just falling into major depression. Where you settle somewhat determines what tools you obtain. You may be able to trade your rifle and ammunition for fishing gear or your spinning wheel for a boat. But it's better if you don't have to. And what kind of people would you want in your survival party? What kind of life experiences are you looking forward to? And what emotions have you contemplated about after time? Now, nobody wants to run around like Chicken Little, screaming the end is near. But there is evidence that something is afoot. Some of those in the know about Planet X and the pole shift have already moved to safe ground, and others are quietly preparing to do that. But there are many others who are, I guess you could say, dithering about Planet X. They're waiting and wanting to have a clear, undeniable sign that it's coming. Who can blame them? There's a natural condition for those who tend to rely only on visual clues to absorb such an abstract and devastating message. Of course, there does exist the attachment to the concept that the political hierarchy will take care of us. After all, look at the House. They have spent 4 years investigating. But their job is legislating. When you consider there's not been any announcement made, it's not reasonable to wait for such an unlikely event. Those who've studied the history of Planet X have a basis of knowledge on the subject. So they're further ahead in being able to accept images and videos from a reliable source as valid. Of course, the reliability of images and videos of Planet X is impossible to determine without their relative knowledge, experience in observing and watching for it, and the skill in dissecting constituent parts of an image to determine whether it's a fake. On the other hand, there are many purported pictures and videos of Planet X on the internet, but the majority are said to be ghost images of the sun, lens flares, sun dogs, window reflection, or optical illusions of one sort or another. And there are still others who can't accept the reality of Planet X until they see the raw light direct from this rogue planet in the sky above their head entering their optic nerve, and some won't even believe it then. The need for multiple concurrent sensory stimulation in real time to break the disbelief in order to accept the existence as a threat is certainly necessary. And this is true of all people, that their body's activated to fight or flight by a direct, visible threat. And before that happens, everything is still abstract and subject to interpretation. Ultimately, once the yet-to-believe finally realize Planet X is a temporary solar system member, and they're going to experience a violent hazard, well, it may be a little bit too late at that point in time to take steps. Well, let's look at the timing of the passage of Planet X and the resulting pole shift. The pole shift is said to be in three parallel layers. The first layer is a general overview of a numbered progression based on 10. The second layer on top of the predicted simplified world event sequence is 7 out of 10. Sequence 1 has been referred to as the devastation of southern Japan. And in northern Japan, earthquakes separated by a matter of weeks. Sequence 2, Victoria, British Columbia, gets sloshed by local earthquakes and tsunamis. And then, of course, sequence three, the New Madrid earthquake fault will erupt. Now, New Madrid was the largest earthquake in the history of the United States. If it erupted, it would devastate this country. Now, envision, if you will, Planet X appears in the sky. Finally, the government has to come out and say, yeah, there's going to be an issue. Now, the public mood will be frantic and dangerously chaotic. This means that you're going to have to move with care if you're out and about. Most likely, your local food markets will be empty. It's recommended you have 1 to 3 year of food supply on hand. Then there's going to be the issue of bottled water availability. Water filters will be sold out. Of course, you're going to need lead testing kits, as the groundwater may have lead in it. And if your current water source has lead in it or has dried up, find a new source. But the volume of lead that's going to be dropping from the sky and the roiled magma nearer to the surface may make groundwater untenable. And depending on the country where you live, there may be roadblocks slowing traffic or routes being blocked. Cell phone towers may be overloaded or out of service. We may see a return to the old-fashioned telephone line, or perhaps CB or ham handheld radios. Gasoline for your vehicle will be hard to get. People in general will be frightened or angry and they'll be acting out, so don't expect others to behave normally or follow through on agreements and promises. I mean, this will be a situation people have not had any experience at dealing with. So if they made a promise that they're going to assist you, they may feel that the exigent circumstances release them from their agreement, or they may just blow you off. Considering human nature in difficult times, you need to keep the details of your safe location, your food and water stores, gasoline, other essential living hardware secret. You might even want to bury them. Unless you're in a land movement zone, probably won't be until the actual pole shift that all hell breaks loose. One thing's for sure, if there is an announcement, it'll be subtle at first, and in the message to be amended as Nibiru, or the second sun, so to speak, becomes increasingly visible. You have to keep in mind, this is, so many people have grown up believing the government's there for their protection. No, the government's there for its own protection. Society simply couldn't take information being released on CNN. Of course, they would change it to support their liberal policies, but the information, no matter how it's dressed up, will be devastating. In fact, that was the real reason for Ronald Reagan's Rex 84 program. Not for the mass exodus of illegal aliens, as the official plan reads. It was to have the government ready for mass issues. And for this reason, FEMA camps and secret detention facilities have also been implemented all across the U.S. In fact, it's one of the reasons the entire continuity of government program was started in the first place. Now, there's a number of random people who have been asked to make comments about the possibility of Nibiru coming. Juan Carlos Cruz. The problem I see in the U.S. in order to prepare people for that event is that most people in this country are too rational, too legalistic, and too moralistic. And that excess of rationality, legalism, and morality prevent people from believing in the warnings of Planet X and to catch people off guard. People in America have a fixed, psycho-rigid way of life that's based on family matters, centers around their nuclear central family. And that system of living is what prevents people from being more involved in politics, astronomy, climate, reality. So a lot of people won't believe the warnings are true. Then we have an individual from Clarion University out of Pennsylvania who very clearly says not only does Nibiru not exist, it's completely physically impossible for Nibiru to exist because mass is a thing and gravity is real. Then we have a graphic designer at Valley Acrylic. It's always the most common fallacy these believers have. They don't realize how long the system's been around and acted like this. Is at best, it's second or third orbit. The only thing that remotely acted like Nibiru would be a rogue planet, but that messes with their Sumerian narrative because it'd be its first trip through the system. In other words, these people are saying it can't exist because we haven't seen it. But if it's a 3,600-year orbit, how could we see it? Then we've got another individual who said not only the U.S. but other countries' governments have been building massive underground tunnels, facilities, and storage sites. And there are seed vaults in certain locations. So it's clear the government's preparing for some massive catastrophe. The Zetas are in relation to the Guru. There's much helpful information on the website about a potential change to our planet as climate change continues, but, you know, again, it's an individual saying, if I haven't seen it, it can't be real. For Midland, I have a collegiate institute. If Planet A is real and it's supposed to pass by Earth once every 3,600 years, and it's supposed to destroy the human race. The Chinese civilization is going to be the one that has lasted for 5,000 years, and Planet X wasn't able to destroy the Chinese civilization. Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe they had places of refuge. Well, the bottom line to all this if there is no Nibiru, what's causing the anomalies to the orbits of Neptune and Uranus? If there is a Nibiru, and Zachariah Sitchin's translation of the Sumerian tablets is accurate, and it's coming through the solar system, then it raises the issue that we have to keep in mind what would a planet that big approaching this planet do to those of us here? Now, of course, you have Zachariah Sitchin died in 2010, unfortunately. I had the chance to know him and talk with him. And when I moved to New York, we had the opportunity to talk on several occasions. He published a book called The End Days, which set the time for the last passing of Nibiru by Earth at 556 BC. Which would mean, given the object's supposed 3,600-year orbit, it would return around 2,900 AD. However, you also need to keep in mind, it doesn't run on a railroad timetable. There have been estimates that it could come as early as 2020, this year. Well, you know, astronomers have rejected the idea of Nibiru and made efforts to inform the public there's no threat to Earth. And they point out that such an object so close to Earth would be easily visible to the naked eye. Planets such as Nibiru would create noticeable effects in the orbits of the outer planets. And there have been noticeable effects seen. And some counter this by claiming the object has been concealed behind the sun, though some claim this would be geometrically impossible. It's claimed that most photos showing Nibiru by the sun are in fact false images of the sun created by reflections within the lenses. Astronomer Mike Brown noted that if this object's orbit was as described, it will only have lasted in the solar system for a million years or so before Jupiter expelled it. And there was no way another object's magnetic field could have had such an effect on the Earth. And he claims that all the predictions of it stopping the Earth's rotation or causing its axis to shift will violate the laws of physics. In his rebuttal to Emanuel Velikovsky's World in Collision, which made the same claim that Earth's rotation could be stopped and restarted, Carl Sagan said the energy required to break the Earth isn't enough to melt it, although it would result in a noticeable increase in temperature. The oceans would be raised to the boiling point of water. And then how does the Earth get started again, rotating at approximately the same rate of speed? In a 2009 interview for the Discovery Channel, Mike Brown noted that while it's not impossible the sun has a distant planetary companion, such an object would have to be lying very far from the observed regions of the solar system to have no detectable gravitational effect on the other planets. Well, there's a lot of believers in the imminent approach of Planet X that accuse NASA of deliberately covering up the visual evidence of its existence. Now, the IRAS Infrared Space Observatory, which was launched in 83, briefly made headlines due to an unknown object that was first described as possibly as large as Jupiter and possibly so close to Earth it would be part of the solar system. This newspaper article was cited by the proponents of the Nibiru cataclysm and as evidence for the existence of Nibiru. But further analysis supposedly revealed that of several initially identified objects, 9 were distant galaxies, and the 10th was a galactic cirrus, or galactic cloud, so to speak. None were found to be solar system bodies. Another accusation frequently made by websites predicting the collision is that the U.S. government built the South Pole Telescope to track Nibiru's trajectory, and the object's been imaged optically. But the South Pole Telescope, which is not supposedly funded by NASA, is a radio telescope and doesn't take optical images. And its South Pole location was chosen due to low humidity environment. There's no way for an approaching object would only be seen from the South Pole. In fact, a picture of Nibiru posted on YouTube turned out to be a Hubble image of the expanding light echo around the star V838MON. Another conspiracy claim regards a patch of missing data in Google Sky near the constellation of Orion, which has often been cited as evidence that Nibiru has been redacted. But a number of amateur astronomers see that same area of the sky. Well, Planet X just basically vanished off the public radar in 1999 when allegedly Planet X cover-ups and disinformation began. Researchers began proposing a strikingly similar object that manifests the same effects on the outer solar system is out there. From the New York Times, May 1st, 1983, scientists now receive 16 hours of information a day from the craft, mainly about the heliosphere, the sun's atmosphere, whose extent and behavior are mysteries. The satellite may detect gravity waves, the gravitational radiation that in the theory would emanate from cosmic cataclysms. We're talking about Pioneer 10. Then, December 17, 1984, from the Observer Reporter, scientists seek key to mass extinctions on Earth. For several months now, the possible mechanism that has stirred the greatest interest and debates, the one involving the sun's theorized companion star, Nemesis, or the Death Star, as scientists are calling it. The companion star, they reason, could follow an eccentric orbit about 1.5 times as long as it is wide that would take it far out as much as 3 light years from the sun and bring it back to the vicinity of the inner solar system once every 26 million years. The Deseret News, January 13, 1985. Mysterious shifting Planet X may have killed off the dinosaurs. Well, the Planet X theory is one that of many being considered by scientists as an explanation for the extinction peaks. Another is the possible presence of Nemesis, a death star that could cause the extinction in a manner similar to Planet X, which would cause comets to rain periodically on Earth. From the Times Daily, January 13, 1985, Planet X theory is one of many being considered by scientists as an explanation for the extinction peaks. On January 3rd issue of Nature, a leading British scientific journal, two researchers from the University of Southwest Louisiana said their description of Planet X is the first to provide solutions to both the periodic extinction problem and the orbital variation problem. January 15, 1985, in the Daily Union, the bottom line is which of these objects gets discovered. If neither is found, there may be evidence there's no periodicity in prehistoric extinctions. The Freelance Star, January 25th, 1985. What killed the dinosaurs? Whitmore and John Matisse, a professor of physics and astronomy, believe a mysterious planet X circling the sun outside the orbits of the known planets periodically draws comets into a collision course with the Earth. And this theory could explain dinosaur extinction. New York Times, January 1st, 1987. Looking for Planet X, old clues and a new theory. If there is a large planet toward the edge of the solar system, according to John Anderson of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, it must be traveling in an elongated orbit nearly at a right angle to the orbits of the other planets. Such an orbit could bring the planet near the rest of the solar system every 700 to 1,000 years, he said. Gainesville Sun, January 8, 1987. Search for Planet X continues. The Pioneer probes have ruled out one possibility. Neptune and Uranus probably were not disturbed by a distant star because the gravitational effects of such a star should have pulled ever so slightly on the probes. But it has been discovered the probes were influenced by gravitational anomalies. Gadsden Times, January 11, 1990. Astronomers searched for the theoretical 10th planet. Well, that relatively small area of the heavens will be searched in April and May by the astrographic telescope at Black Birch. It'll take pictures of the target area on successive nights, and the photos will be sent to Washington for study. Although Harrington couldn't find Planet X for another 3 years, many believe the photos showed the incoming planet led to Harrington's, he's the one that died of esophageal cancer almost overnight. Lawrence Journal World, April 22nd, 1990. Space telescope to seek Planet X. The trick is to know where to look. Harrington has started searching a region within the constellation Centaurus using a relatively modest 8-inch telescope at the Black Birch Observatory in New Zealand. Amazingly, most searches for Planet X to this point have been made in the Northern Hemisphere, for economic reasons, of course. That's like if you lose your keys. Now, the old story is that a police officer came upon a man searching an area underneath a street light, inch by inch, and he asked him what he was doing. He said, "I'm looking for my keys." And he said, "Where'd you lose them?" And he said, "Over there in the park, but the light's better here." Bangor Daily News, January 4th, 1991. Planet X controversy has astronomers going in circles. Harrington thinks Planet X's last close approach was in the 1700s and has been receding since. And that might explain the greater deviation seen when Uranus was first discovered than are seen today. Harrington predicted the Planet X would be found in the constellation Centaurus near the Southern Cross. Bangor Daily News, January 1st, 1992. Saturn will be the only major planet visible in the January night sky. Harrington gave his own odds of finding Planet X no more than 50-50. Well, wouldn't a 50-50 chance of finding one planet in an enormous sky that's further away than any previously discovered be rather good odds? I would think so. I'd take those odds to the casino. New York Times, September 20th, 1992. Beyond Pluto, an icy new orb. According to Dr. David Jewett, a University of Hawaii astronomer who made the discovery with Dr. Jane Liu, the University of California at Berkeley, we think this is the first of a large number of similar objects going to be discovered in the outer solar system. Well, Dr. Jewett can find an object smaller than Pluto in the outer solar system than surely Dr. Harrington can, and in fact did find Planet X. Well, Dr. Harrington died January 23rd, 1993. New York Times, January 27th, 1993. Robert Harrington, astronomer at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, died Saturday at George Washington University Hospital. He was only 50. Observatory said he died of cancer. Known for his work in the field of positional astronomy, he developed innovative approaches to multiple star dynamics and worked on precision stellar distances and solar system dynamics. He was also engaged in a search for Planet X, a hypothetical body that's beyond the orbit of Pluto, the ninth and outermost known planet in the solar system. He received the observatory's Simon Newcomb Award for his significant contributions to the study of the dynamics of the solar system. Although the obituary merely states he died of cancer, we now know he supposedly died of esophageal cancer within days after contracting it while simultaneously traveling on a physically demanding journey conducting his research. And his contraction of cancer was immediately preceded by his communication to NASA and the U.S. Naval Observatory of his discovery of Planet X. So was this just a terrible coincidence, or did somebody in the U.S. government want to prevent him from publicizing his findings? June 1st, 1993, New York Times. Evidence for Planet X evaporates in the spotlight of new research. Although Dr. Standish's analysis leaves little room for belief in a Planet X, it does not address another issue that's intrigued some planetary astronomers for the last decade, the existence of a companion star of the Sun. 1984, a group of astronomers, paleontologists, and statisticians proposed that such a star that they named Nemesis might occasionally approach our outer planetary system close enough to dislodge comets from the Oort cloud. Well, after Dr. Harrington's death, there was a massive movement to cover up the possible existence of Planet X. After his death, it transformed from an almost certain existence to the evaporation of Planet X evidence in a mere 6 months. No other explanation for the stunning reversal of Planet X reporting in the mainstream media than NASA, the U.S. Naval Observatory, and the U.S. government launched an all-out cover-up and disinformation campaign. And moreover, there's no more solid evidence that Harrington found Planet X in his mysterious death following his discovery. From the Lakeland Ledger, June 6, 1993, Planet X isn't there. For over 50 years, stargazers have hunted for Planet X, the solar system's hypothetical 10th planet. Its existence was inferred from what appeared to be irregularities in the orbital motions of several known planets. But a new study indicates that there's no such thing. Now, the article that put the kibosh on the Planet X research didn't produce any information that unequivocally disproved the existence of Planet X. Dr. E. Miles Standish Jr. announced it was the existence was based on erroneous observations and calculations. Essentially, he was saying 43 years worth of research and data produced by multiple competent scientists and astronomers was erroneous. And we're supposed to accept that based on his word. Now, Dr. Standish did not explain the deviations in Neptune's orbit. He made significant corrections to it. He can't explain the deviations, But it can't be Planet X because, well, gee whiz, Planet X doesn't exist. How do we know? Well, we just do. So when were these extremely accurate measurements 6 months before that? DTE, August 31st, 1993. Miles Standish at a Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena claims the mass value used for Neptune in the calculations was inaccurate. That's the same as saying, look at that band. Only little Johnny's in step. Everyone else is out of step. The point of all this discussion about inaccurate information and miscalculations is to put doubt in the minds of the public and discredit the body of work that supports the existence of Planet X. Now, from Discover, September 1st, 1993, Planet X is dead, is the headline. Standish's work doesn't disprove that no other planet exists in the solar system, only no planet fitting Planet X's description exists close enough to Uranus and Neptune to distort their orbits. Now, could Standish be incorrect? Well, we couldn't dare say that. I mean, after all, he's at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. The Economist, May 15th, 1997. Unbuckling the Kuiper belt. And even if Pluto's origin is at last tidied up, the belt still has much to reveal. For one thing, the object described by Dr. Liu and Dr. Jewett in their pending article in Nature is not only the biggest Kuiper belt object so far, it's also the most got the most eccentric orbit. It seems to travel from the vicinity of Pluto out to three times the distance of anything else in the Kuiper belt. At a hundredth of the mass of Pluto, it's not exactly the planet X that some astronomers think may be out there, but its orbital period is well over 700 years. And there's absolutely no reason why something bigger shouldn't be lurking unseen at the other end of a similar eccentric orbit. Now, a Planet X was mentioned as a passing reference at the end of the article, giving it kind of the same connotation as unicorns and witches on broomsticks, things that we know don't exist. So Planet X has been relegated to a mystical status. Well, from the Madison Courier, July 12, 1997. The question asks, what is Planet X? It would be the 10th planet in the solar system if it existed, and the quest for Planet X began with the discovery of Neptune in 1846. Astronomers began trying to explain the deviation in the expected orbits of both Neptune and Uranus. According to recent articles in Astronomy Journal, there's no evidence to date that supports the existence of a planet such as Planet X. And Miles Standish of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory thinks the original observations of the orbits of Uranus and Neptune were in error. Everybody's wrong but him. Well, from New Scientist, October 18, 1997. We're first given a thorough grounding in the science of our own solar system, reminded how its other planets were discovered. The abortive searches for Vulcan, which is believed to be closer to the Sun than Mercury, and Planet X, thought by some to exist beyond orbit of Pluto, are included to help make us aware of the pitfalls. In other words, if you believe in Planet X, or in Vulcan for that matter, you're crazy. Well, what they're saying is Robert Harrington's life was wasted. The famous, from February 1998 in the Atlantic, the famous search for Planet X was culminated in Pluto's discovery was the pet project of Percival Lowell, a Boston Brahmin, an amateur astronomer who around the turn of the century became obsessed with two notions. The Martians had constructed canals on the surface of their planet, and that tiny gravity-induced wiggles in the orbit of Uranus and Neptune indicated a planet with a mass six times that of Earth is somewhere out there. So now they're saying, or implying, because no one would dare say it, that if you believe in Planet X, you believe there are Martians digging canals on Mars. Well, MSNBC, that bastion of truth, October 7th, 1999. Speculation about the existence of unseen celestial companions dates back far before the discovery of Pluto in 1930, and even figures in more recent fringe of phenomena such as the 1997 Heaven Gates tragedy and talk of a new Planet X. Well, you have to wonder why NASA would continue to publish articles referencing an unseen celestial body orbiting outside our solar system if there really wasn't one there. Notice the reference to the new Planet X, and it continues with answering continuing nagging scientific questions. I thought they were answered by the great Miles Standish, who talked about the significant corrections of the expected orbits of Uranus and Neptune. Well, the question has to now be asked, how could there be nagging scientific questions if Planet X doesn't exist? And there's been no other plausible explanation made to date. Well, it's now clear NASA's falling all over itself trying to cover up the discovery of Planet X, and that their explanations of new discoveries has to be taken in that vein. From The Economist, October 14th, 1999. If the new object were a captured alien, it would give astronomers their first good look at an extrasolar planet. Or a brown dwarf, if that's what it turns out to be. And if it exists, they should be able to see it pretty soon. Even something too small to emit visible light to give off radio waves, infrared radiation. I mean, Jupiter does. So a big radio telescope would probably be able to spot it. If not, the next generation of infrared space observatories certainly should. And if they do, both Dr. Murray and Dr. Matisse should enjoy rather more than 15 minutes of fame. First of all, doesn't it seem like one big circle has been completed by the astronomical community and is now right back to where it started in the 50s? The article I just quoted began by dismissing the notice that an object, any object, is lurking in the outer reaches of the solar system. But then it contradicts itself with a sentence in the final paragraph, and if it exists, they should be able to see it pretty soon. Now, at no point in this article is Planet X mentioned, or is the history behind the search for Planet X even discussed. It references brown dwarfs and the possibility that one randomly cruises by the solar system from time to time. Well, now it's gone to great lengths and a lot of expense to put Planet X to bed, or frankly, to keep it in bed while still maintaining that there could be something out there. Then October 15th, 1999... another distant consort for the sun. This week, two groups of researchers independently proposed that an object several times more massive than Jupiter is orbiting out among the comets of the Oort cloud, which is 25,000 to 30,000 times further from the sun than the Earth is. Both groups argue this unseen behemoth gravitationally perturbs Oort cloud comets, sending them toward Earth along a distinctive sky-girdling band. Well, it just seems Planet X vanished, and yet now it's coming back. Well, you have to ask yourself, how is it possible for us to believe that, we're in the same position as were those living at the time that a lead scientist said in referring to meteorites. How could you say there are rocks falling from the sky when we all know there are no rocks in the sky? That raises so many questions. Does anybody know what's going on? Well, there have been numerous theories trying to explain what's going on in the solar system, and yet avoiding all discussion of Planet X. You know, we've talked about bases on the moon, and I had an email wanting to know if I had any more information about how the moon became the Earth's satellite. The theory that the moon was captured in Earth's gravity and thus became Earth's satellite is known as the capture theory. Proponents of this theory contend the moon was propelled off its original course into an immense and elongated trajectory traveling around the sun. Schindler Bellamy concluded from his interpretation of the symbols on the sun gate at Tiwanaku in Bolivia that the moon was a planetary object that traveled too closely to the Earth and got caught up in its gravitational forces. He and a number of others believe that this happened about 12,000 years ago. And before that, there either was a different moon or no moon. Now, the capture theory hypothesis was eventually dismissed. Some researchers in their ivory tower maintain the moon is too large to become caught in Earth's orbit. In comparing the two in proportion to the Earth, the moon's about 1/8 of the Earth's 1/80th of the Earth's mass, said to make it much too big for it to become ensnared by the Earth's gravity. Isaac Asimov actually supported that idea. He wrote, "What in blazes is our moon doing way out there? It's too far out to be a true satellite. It's too big to have been captured by the Earth. And chances of such a capture having been affected and the moon then have taken up a nearly circular orbit about the Earth are too small to make a certain eventuality credible." You know, it is interesting to note that the moon's orbit is circular, and it's just the right distance during a solar eclipse to cover the sun completely. Well, when you start talking about that, that raises other questions about things that have been seen on the moon. Now, we've discussed what I wrote about in Is Someone on the Moon. You know, one anomaly located in Apollo 10 photographs that NASA has refused to discuss is an object that's suspended approximately 7 miles above the lunar surface as the appearance of a ruin of an ancient castle. In fact, researcher and writer Richard Hoagland named it the castle. The bottom of the object seems to have a row of pillars, and it looks like a turret on top. If you want to order that picture from NASA, it's AS-10-32-4822. Censorinus, a 3rd century Roman grammarian and author, wrote a book called The Di Natale, wrote about a time in Earth's history when there was no moon. Well, if that is correct, then the moon is not a natural satellite, and it only adds to the mystery. Now, according to Chaldean lore, now that's an ancient province of Babylonia, there's a tale about the origin of the moon. The tale seems to offer an explanation as to how the moon became the Earth's satellite. It stated, Anu opened up the original abyss and created a whirling motion like boiling. The moon passed through an opening like a giant bubble made its way across the heavens. To some, the passage appears to suggest that the moon was mysteriously brought into our solar system from somewhere else. Others wonder if that opening was a kind of gigantic portal where the moon came through or was sent through into our universe. Then there's the anomalous construction in the Tycho crater. It's referred to as the chalet. An image of the item is featured in author Mike Barra's book, Ancient Aliens on the Moon. He said the object looks like an A-frame building. You can find it in a photograph taken by the Clementine spacecraft. Then there's Chandrayaan-1, India's first lunar probe, launched October 22, 2008 by the Indian Space Research Organization. It was expected to perform for 2 years and then shut down. However, in August of 2009, it suddenly lost contact in the middle of transmitting data back to Earth. At that point, it had completed 95% of its mission. Well, unable to reestablish contact, they announced that the mission had come to an end. But in 2017, they located that lunar probe still orbiting the moon. It was this probe that first located water on the moon. It also located signatures of organic matter, material that was a part of a recently living organism on the lunar surface. Now, just where this mysterious organic matter came from and what it might be is still a mystery. Well, you know, early studies of the moon and lunar phenomena in China began millennia ago. Ancient Chinese cosmologists recorded the moon's movements, which attributed to their formation of the Chinese zodiac. In addition, ancient Chinese research made it possible to predict lunar eclipses. China also had its share of mysterious phenomena involving the moon. United States astronaut James McDivitt once spotted a UFO as he flew over China. He said that UFO was moving low over China, described it as a bright star moving fast. China's lunar orbiting spacecraft, Chang'e 1, was launched October 24, 2007. And the success of that mission paved the way for future Chinese missions. Its first spacecraft to land on the moon was Chang'e 3, launched December 2013. And during the mission, it filmed a UFO that streamed an array of colors, illuminating the moon's surface as it passed by. According to pictures, the UFO was enormous. Sources have said it took over 6 minutes to cross over the moon. That's huge. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow night and talk about more strangeness on our closest satellite. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.